Oh my god.
I just stepped on the dog.
The dog's fine, don't worry.
Welcome to our second season of Spirited Discussions. I'm Lachlan Watt and I have over 10 years experience in both the spirits and bar industries, while also having an insatiable thirst for understanding the booze that we drink. Through this series, we will dive deeper into the topics that we have grazed in season one and dive into some other historical tidbits that have guided our drinking habits. Join me through our second season and, well, let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Spirited Discussions. And today I am joined by Kayla Reed, and we are going to be discovering, I guess, the intricacies of the humble martini. Welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
And first of all, I think we should have a little cheers.
I think that's probably best. Chin chin.
Cheers. We all love a martini.
That's a good good.
We all love a martini. I mean, it's something that's a little bit, can sometimes be a bit misunderstood. I mean, we've all had a bad martini.
Yeah, I think most people have had a bad martini, yeah. Let's be real.
It's one of those things where, one of those cocktails that, because it's so simple, there's nothing to hide behind. So it needs to be constructed really, really beautifully.
Absolutely. There's definitely a finesse to it. I think people underestimate how hard it is to make a perfect martini.
Yeah. And it's also catered to each individual person, you know.
It's definitely a love letter, I think, when it comes to martinis. Like, for me personally, like, I'm a huge martini drinker.
Which is why you're here right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, anywhere I go, I'm like, I want my martini. I'm very particular how I like my martini. And there's been times when I've gone to a place and someone's kind of known me at the bar and they've just automatically made me a martini and given it to me. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh my God, I've not told them how I like my martini.
No.
Is this? And then I have a sip and I'm like, that's not how I like my martini. And now I feel obliged to drink it, you know? So
I learned this very early in my bartending career because a previous guest that we've had on, which was my mentor in this industry, Joey Tai.
Oh,
the martini queen. She was the one who taught me how to make a martini for her.
Exactly. And so, it's so individual how you make a martini, especially for someone in the industry, I think.
Yeah. But actually, seeing as we're on this topic about how you are a martini obsessive, tell us about how you got into being a bartender and what led you to favoring this kind of cocktail.
Cool. Okay. Well, I've been in the industry for a long time. I've been in hospitality for probably about 13 years now, I think. I did start out in coffee though. So I did work in specialty coffee for about 4 years. And then I did like a big trip overseas to Europe and I went to like a lot of bars and I experienced things that I'd never really experienced before. And I came back and I was like, man, like I really want to learn this side of things, you know, like the cafe side is very different to the nightlife bar side of hospitality. So I came back and I was like, look, I'm going to up my skills. Like I'll go and see if I can get a job in a bar. And I was trying to do both for a while. So I was still doing coffee because I loved it, but then I was trying to do nights as well. And I think I was definitely a bit of a half human during mm-hmm. those couple of years, but I learned so much. And then I kind of said, look, I need to give up the coffee. This is where my passion lies. I really love bartending. I was learning so much. I'd like kind of, by that time, gotten a couple of mentors. You know, I started working at Lychee Lounge. Pez Collier was working there and he was kind of one of the first people that I met like in this, I guess, higher echelon of like that side of hospitality and that side of bartending. And so I kind of worked in beer boutiques and I worked at Lychee Lounge. I worked at Lefty's and then eventually I kind of made my way over to Cobbler. And
so this is all up in Brisbane.
This is all up in Brisbane. Yeah. Yes. So I am in Melbourne now, but this was all up in Brisbane. And then, yeah, I kind of made my way to Savile Row, started running Savile. And then I just kind of got to a point where I was like, look, I think I've hit my glass ceiling here. Yeah. I don't know where I would go if I was to leave here. So I was tossing up between Sydney and Melbourne. And then I was like, umming and ahhing, and Melbourne was always calling to me a bit more, but then there was opportunity in Sydney. But anyway, I've been in Melbourne for nearly 5 years now. Yeah. did work for the Speakeasy Group for 4 of those years, helping them open venues, run their bars, and then eventually made my way into head of creative beverage there, which I was doing. And now I'm just starting my own kind of little thing. So I've started a consultancy business, and on the weekends I'm working at the Black Pearl.
Fantastic. I mean, so one of our episodes recorded this season with Fred, who is a Black Pearl alumnus.
We love Fred.
Oh, fantastic. He's bartender. He's a good guy. But yeah, Black Pearl has been such an inspiration for Australian bartending as a whole. And I mean, you and I were talking about it just before, you know.
Yeah, it is an establishment.
It is an establishment. An
institution.
There's a reason that it's so famous globally, not just nationally. So,
yeah, absolutely.
All right, we should dive in to our 60-second history.
Oh, are you ready?
I'm not sure if I am. This is such a murky history.
It's it's a wee bit convoluted, but as we were saying earlier, most cocktails from this era are not well documented, hard to trace.
Or overtly documented in such a convoluted, strange
Definitely.
Way.
Definitely.
But I'll get you to time me.
Well,
hassle me.
I'm going to give you a countdown.
Please do.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want from 3, 2, 1 or do you want from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1?
3, 2, 1's fine.
All right,
or
ready?
Just one.
3, 2, 1, go.
As murky as the history of the martini is, it is more than likely a derivation of the Martinez, which in turn was a derivation of the Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Well, this is complicated by numerous variations. The first known Martinez comes from O.H. Byron's 1884 publication of The Modern Bartender, being made from Old Tom Gin, Sweet Vermouth and Curacao. This was, a precursor to the martini. But the Marguerite cocktail also came out in 1900 in Harry Johnson's Bartender Manual. With each new publication of the martini turns drier and drier and drier.
Yes, yep, less sugar.
Less sugar, less sugar, less sweet vermouth, until the term dry martini is coined in 1906, which still had Curacao in it. Although the use of orange bitters or Curacao was dropped in the 1940s, although the expansion of the martini category has drastically expanded since the 80s.
Boom!
Woo! Oh, nice. All right, I'll give it to you.
It's pretty good. I think that was pretty good.
1 second over. That's pretty good. All right.
Little
now,
martini sip there.
Yeah, let's let's talk about the martini we're actually having. So we made this just before the recording, and this is a martini that I personally really love to make, which
it's
is
tasty.
A navy strength savory gin with a split between dry vermouth and Manzanilla sherry. And then, you know, we added an olive and a lemon twist because we're
bougie.
Bougie.
We like things OTG.
Gluttonous. But, yeah, and we're making this with a local gin for us as well, Antagonist Spirits, which is a gin that I've really enjoyed recently.
I think it's really yummy. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, that really herbal, savory element.
Mm-hmm. And great with the olive and the lemon.
Yeah.
And I would go to bars, especially I would go to the Everly, and like I would go in there like, you want a lemon or an olive? I'm like, I want both. And like, well, you're crazy.
Yeah,
like,
this is, you know what?
Best of both worlds, man.
I had a couple other things in there, some olive oil.
Yeah, it's a meal.
Well, I guess this leads us into what your first experience with the martini was.
Yeah.
What was that?
Man, like I think my first experience with a martini, air quotes, would have been the espresso martini. But we all know that that's not a true martini in the true sense. I think in its truest form, it would have been at Lychee Lounge up in Brisbane. And I think I delved in first with dirty martinis because I really loved savory stuff. Like I would always go there and I'd have like Bloody Marys, and I more lent to that side of the tart savory versus your kind of more sweet palate. So I was like, look, like really want to get into martini. So a couple of guys like started, Thomas Ham and Ken Perrette were working there. And I just started with dirty martinis. And I think over time I was like, I don't want the brine actually. Like, can you just leave that out? Maybe I'll just have a couple of olives. And then now my martini is a wet martini. You know, like that's how I like my martinis, with a really nice crisp London dry gin.
Yeah, showcasing the spirit and the vermouth, which are like core components of what the martini actually is.
If you've got a great gin and you've got a nice vermouth, like all that you need is the right dilution and the right temperature.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a lot of people don't recognize the fact that dilution is such an important aspect.
Oh my God. The dilution is wrong. The martini is bow, bow.
Like we were saying before, it's there's nothing to hide behind. You know, it's not like in an espresso martini or most other cocktails, you've got something
you've got that sugar element. But that's also why, you know, way back when they were putting sugar into their martinis, you know. But
the gin was not as good.
Because the gin wasn't good. They needed to hide those impurities. Whereas these days we have developed so far that you get the beautiful clean spirit. You don't need to add extras to it.
Well, that's where the cocktail comes from in history as well. It's just people trying to hide the faulty spirit with sugar.
Yeah.
And other flavorings being bitters or whatever it might be, you know, which is where the old fashioned comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
Go back enough.
I know some bartenders these days who still like putting a bump of sugar into their martinis. I'm not one of those bartenders.
Yeah, yeah.
Not for me, but, you know, they say, well, you need that palate weight. You need that little bit of length. I'm like, but I don't want my martini to be sweet.
Yeah.
I don't want sugar in my martini.
I want salty and I want dry. That's what I want.
If you put my sugar in my martini, like head cut off.
But, I mean, there's also it's an incredibly personal cocktail, you know?
Absolutely.
It's incredibly personal.
Yeah.
I mean, every single person will want it in a different way because it is so subjective.
And I think that in itself is a learning period too, you know? Like I just said, you know, my first kind of martini was a dirty martini. But, like, over time you really develop your own preference for martinis and that is your own journey to take, which I think is so awesome in itself.
I love my martini with a little bar spoon of heavily peated whiskey in there.
Look, I'm not opposed to that. That sounds pretty good.
Salty, smoky, you know.
Yeah.
But that's my own personal preference and that's what I love. And same with that split between dry vermouth and sherry.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that.
I love sherry. So sherry's delicious.
We call it bartender's salt for a reason.
Yes. Everything is made better with a little bit of sherry, I would say.
Drop a sherry, you're in the win. But let's break down some of these classic martini specs as well while we have you here.
I'm here.
Because we've mentioned, you know, dry martini, wet martini, dirty martini. So what are some classic specs that you really want to see from bartenders or just in general that people can look at?
Totally. I mean, like you've obviously got your stock standard dry martini spec, which generally would be like a 6-1,
mm-hmm.
you know, so 60-10 is a really easy ratio to follow.
60 milliliters to 10 milliliters.
Yeah, yeah.
to simplify that a little bit more.
Yeah, sorry if you want to elaborate. but then you have your wet martini as well, which I think wet martinis are super all the rage these days. Like bartenders,
yes.
Bartenders really love a wet martini. And obviously dry martinis definitely have their place, but I think in Australia as well where it is a little bit hotter, you want things like a little bit longer, a little bit juicier. Mm-hmm. Wet martinis absolutely shine. So if I was going to do a wet martini, you would probably do a 2-1. So, you know, 2 parts gin, 1 part vermouth.
Yeah.
I quite like for my wet martini a 60-20. So mm-hmm. like just a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have your dirty martini, which I've spoken a little bit about as well, which I think is really dependent on the olive brine that you're using because...
It's got to be good olive brine.
If it's not good olive brine, the drink's not going to be good.
Not that jar of olives you've had in the back of the cupboard
for years and years. It's been open for a while as well.
You know,
it's not going to be tasty. So I think dirty martinis especially, you really have to have a good brine. But also that's really dependent on the guest.
Yeah.
How dirty do they want it? Do they want just, you know, a little wave over the top with your olive or do they want it like getting down and dirty with Christina? Mm-hmm. Like real... So that's what I said. Well, you want it like Christina Aguilera dirty or, you know, just like a little, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I worked in a bar a long time ago, about 11 years ago, that our dirty martini was made with olives that were brined in vermouth. So the vermouth itself was brined.
Okay.
That's how we balanced that.
Yum.
Yeah, it
sounds
was
great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So we just emptied out our olive jar, filled it full of vermouth, and then just left that there.
That's a failsafe. That's what I say.
Yeah.
Yeah, delicious.
And that was probably one of the smartest things we ever did. Also using maiden eye vermouth, so it couldn't go salty, savory anyway.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some people will love their dirty martinis equal parts.
Like
olive brine.
All brine.
Yeah.
There's been a few guests that have been coming into the Black Pearl. I work up in the attic, but... They're like, yep, give me the dirty martini, but then like I want the brine on the side as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like they want the option to still add more.
Like a pickleback
kind of. More brine. I'm like, whatever you want, absolutely. You know, like maybe I just drop the gin down and just put more brine in, you know, but yeah, each to their own. And we don't make judgments about how people want to drink their
it's
drinks.
It's not our job.
It is not.
You know, our job is to provide for people.
We provide a service and we make everyone's nights.
Exactly. And this kind of leads us into, well, I mean, before we get into this next one, this is a good precursor to it. The shaken or stirred, right? We talked about this a little bit just before this. Now, a lot of people love a shaken martini, especially the James Bond martini, the Vespa, right?
Yes.
So I find that there's a lot of pretentiousness around the martini in general. Yes, there's 100% preferences, but
there's a pretentious nature as well, for sure.
An elitism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great way to describe it. Look, I think I've been working in the industry for a really long time. And I think like when it comes to stuff like this, just give the guests what they want. You know, like if someone comes up to you and wants their martini shaken because they saw it in James Bond or they read Ian Fleming's Casino Royale and they're like wanting this crazy, amazing experience, then sure. But also I think like it's good to say, or just have them understand like why they would want it like that and like the differences that it's going to make to the drink. Because like obviously stirring is so much more delicate. You're going to have more time with the spirit. You're not bruising the spirit as well and like creating
shock.
Flex of ice and the shock as well of like bashing. Because it's delicate. The chances of over-diluting are so high. Whereas if you have a stir down and even a throw, like I really love a thrown Vespa. I think a thrown Vespa still creates like a really beautiful amount of aeration, but you're not like bashing, you know, the booze around.
But also you need to adjust your shake on those kind of things. Exactly. Because like even something like a rolled one is fantastic as well.
Yeah.
To create that same or a similar kind of texture to something like a thrown or.
Exactly. It's about creating texture.
Yeah. Aeration and texture is where that kind of changes.
Exactly. But look, I think if you want to do a shaken Vespa, do a shaken Vespa. But as we were saying earlier, please double strain.
Always. It's got to be double strained. In the words of a friend of mine, I love to eat eye shards.
Something I've never said.
Yeah. But yeah, so the Vespa Martini obviously was inspired by James Bond and the books by Ian Fleming, you know, which were, funnily enough, satirical spy novels.
Yes, and the specs for Vespa in that book as well are crazy. It's like 3 parts gin, 1 part vodka, 1/2 part Lillet. Like you would be on the ground, girl. Mm. Like that's a boozy martini.
It is. And then it's just been refined since then to become something that is, I guess, not satirical. It is something that is actually quite tasty.
I think it's a great drink.
Yeah.
I think, like, it's definitely in its own realm, but I'd go hard with a Vespa.
My one thing for a Vespa, it needs to be a textural, flavorful vodka. It can't be just neutral.
I agree. Yeah. You got to have all the components playing.
Yeah. A really beautiful textural vodka, and then that can highlight the flavorful gin that you're using.
Yeah. It's well, I think that's the thing as well. Like, as we said, it's meant to be a textural experience.
Yeah. And so what specs would you normally use for a
Vespa? I mean, it really depends. I think you could do 60 gin, 20 vodka, 5 Lillet.
Quinquina.
Oh, 5 Quinquina. Mm. Yeah.
I do love a Quinquina though.
Nice. I would generally just do, I'm like a purist. I'm just straight in with my gin, my vodka, and my Lillet. But I know that Quinquina brings in a depth that you were getting with that old school Lillet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Quinquina is not really used as much anymore.
It's definitely not.
Which is a shame in my personal opinion. But
I agree.
Yeah.
It's just not, I don't think it's widely known either.
No, it's not. So It's a relatively dead aromatized wine, I guess. Do you have a preferred vodka or gin?
For a Vespa? Or just in general?
No, just in general.
I do. I never thought you'd ask. So if I'm going, look, let's go Australian first. I I'm not really into like really, really overly botanic gins for my martinis. So if I am going Australian, I just go straight for Never Never. I think Never Never.
Juniper driven.
Oh, you get it.
Yeah, their Juniper Freak specifically or their Southern Strength is just phenomenal.
They're both amazing. Both make amazing martinis. And I think they are more akin to that like London dry style, very crisp. You're still getting like a little bit of Australian botanical come through. But the basis of it is citrus and juniper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like super, super delicious. If I am going not Australian, I love Martin Millers. I love Tanqueray.
My partner Lindsay just discovered Martin Millers not that long ago.
Oh my God,
ago.
It's so good.
And it was the gin that was available that wasn't Monkey 47, which is one of her preferreds.
Monkey 47
and
is much more
Martin
expensive.
Martin Miller, just fantastic gin.
I've been drinking Martin Miller martinis for years and it's never led me astray. So, no.
But even something simple like just standard Tanqueray or Beefeater, just real juniper driven.
Man, I love Beefeater. I think Beefeater gets such a bad rap, but like
just because it's the rail
it is
pool.
What it is. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like there's no frills. It's great for mixing. It's like got beautiful juniper notes to it. Anyone that like shits on Beefeater, I'm like, nah, nah, nah.
It's gin that tastes like real fucking
it's
gin.
It's real gin. You know? Like, that is gin in its core.
Yeah.
So.
I feel the same with just the core Tanqueray product, right? It's just gin that tastes like real gin.
I love Tanqueray.
Yeah.
It's delicious. Obviously, Tank 10 is really good and
but
also makes a great martini. But obviously, you've got that grapefruit aspect in there as well. Can't go wrong with just a Tanqueray martini.
No.
Little lemon twist.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's all these other fantastic, we mentioned Monkey 47 being a more botanical gin. And we've got our local heroes, like things like Four Pillars and Antagonist here. And
yeah, tasty, tasty.
If you want to go into things that are more, I guess, modern or contemporary.
Contemporary.
Like my good friends at Charlatan, they make fantastic pear and pink peppercorn gin that's fantastic for a martini. Especially a wet martini.
Yeah.
So fruity and bright and incredible. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's so many great gins for that. But what about vodkas?
Oh, my God. I just stepped on the dog. The dog's fine. Don't worry.
Yeah, he'll get underneath your feet.
Look, I don't drink heaps of vodka, but I will say for a great standard rail pour, Ketel One. Can't go wrong. Like, beautiful texture on it.
Yeah.
Really nice. I don't mind a little Belvedere as well.
Yeah.
If we want. But my go-to generally is gin. Yeah. I don't drink heaps of vodka. If I'm going to drink vodka, I'm probably just going to have it in, like, a vodka lime soda.
Well,
Or in a Cosmo.
I've recently started – well, I recently did a lot of research on vodka for an episode that we've done. And – honestly, I've got this new passion for vodka in general.
Love that.
And there's this I mentioned it during that episode, the Hartshorn vodka, and they do a salt
bush. Oh, my God.
And a peat-smoked Sheepway vodka.
These guys, I've had the Sheepway vodka before.
Yeah.
It's insanely good.
And that would make a fantastic Vespa.
So textural.
Yeah.
Yummy. I totally forgot about those guys. I used to drink them a lot when I was in Queensland.
Mm.
But I don't really see them very much down here.
Yeah, they're here now.
Yeah. Cool. Nice.
And they're doing some incredible things. So, I mean.
And, like, they use waste product, which is awesome.
Yeah,
sustainability.
Exactly. Yeah, and. They've won multiple
world's
best vodka.
Yeah, they clean up. They do really well.
Fantastic branding, fantastic awards, fantastic product.
Agree.
All right, we need to nip this in the bud. We've mentioned it multiple times.
Okay.
What I like to call the pop martinis.
Oh, yeah. All right, here we go.
So this is post-80s cocktail culture, right?
I'm with you.
We've got the apple martini.
Yep.
Lychee martini.
Oh, I'm envisioning it.
The espresso martini or espressi mart, if you will.
Espressi mart.
Yeah. Never espresso.
Never espresso.
The porn star.
Delish.
You already mentioned it. It's not really a martini, but, you know, people consider it to be so. The cosmopolitan.
Also really tasty.
A fantastic
drink. If it's made right.
Let's break these down a little bit and why they came around. Why they're called martinis specifically.
Yes.
Well, is there anything you want to say towards that?
There's a couple things I could say. I mean, like, I think the most prominent for me in this era that I really do think shaped this, like, martini that aren't martinis was the espresso martini.
It was.
You know, like, because it was initially called the vodka espresso, but then it morphed afterwards.
It was what was it called? The stimulant?
Pharmaceutical stimulant. Yeah. And then it eventually coined vodka espresso. But yeah. I think in that era, it just became anything that was served in that classic V-shaped martini glass was then coined a martini.
Yeah.
So lychee martini, apple martini, French martini, you know, as long as it came in that signature 90s style coupe, people just called it a martini.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a martini at its core? Probably not.
Not at all. You know, it doesn't fit the standard spec, but I mean, they're still called the martini and they're classic cocktails, you know.
They are.
Modern classics, but they are still classics.
Yes.
You know? And they all have their own fucking place in the industry.
I unashamedly love espresso martinis.
Me too.
Little pick me up, a little bit of coffee, a little bit of bitterness, like a little touch of sweetness. I don't want to be too sweet.
One of the best things about living in this city, which is Melbourne, is the quality of coffee.
Oh my God.
To use for these cocktails. Right. Love an espresso martini. You can get a great espresso martini in almost any bar around Melbourne.
That's the difference.
And it's just good quality
it's
coffee.
The coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it tastes like coffee, then it's going to be a good espresso martini.
Exactly. You know, and I've had some of the worst espresso martinis in other parts of the world.
I've had some bad ones too.
But in Melbourne, I don't think I've ever had a bad espresso martini.
I don't think so either. Now that you're saying that.
Not to that point.
That yeah. I'm just like, well, this is like almost undrinkable.
Yeah.
And it's just because people make them too sweet.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be over. It's a sweet drink, let's be real. But like all cocktails are about balance at the end of the day. So as long as it's balanced and you got that real bitter coffee edge to it. And also I like a little bit of salt in my espresso martini.
Me too.
Just a little smicker on top.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of grated coffee bean as well.
But also the espresso martini has evolved so far where the espresso martini is just a coffee cocktail now, right? It doesn't have to be vodka. It doesn't have to be.
No.
It just has to be coffee, sweet, and
it's a profile.
Alcohol, right?
Yeah.
That's what it needs to be.
100%.
And people can do them with rum or tequila, which is arguably my preferred.
Yum.
You know, there are all these different ones around. The best espresso martini I had was in Paris and it was made with Pinot de Chirons.
Wow, okay.
And it was just phenomenal.
I've not had an espresso martini in Paris. Making a note, I'll go do that soon.
It was fucking phenomenal.
Sick.
To be polite about it.
Yeah.
But there's also, I mean, the porn star martini is massive in Europe, right? Especially in the UK.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what, just passion fruit and bubbly wine.
As long as you have passion fruit, vanilla, and something sparkling in it, you can make it however you want, you know?
I was in Edinburgh and I walked past a pub and they had a list of different porn star martinis. It was their menu of porn star martinis.
But what did they all have passion fruit and vanilla in
them? Yeah, passion fruit, vanilla, and bubbly wine, but just different alcohols.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's very niche.
And they had it on this A-frame sign at the front of the pub. It was wild.
Is wild. Well, they've found their target market, I guess.
It was called the porn family.
I mean, that's kind of cool. People were going for it. Yeah. That's maybe not what they're expecting, but, you know.
But that's the UK, right?
Yeah, for real.
Then you got the French martini as well.
Yes. I don't mind a French martini. It's not my go-to, and I think it definitely needs balance with a French martini. Like, because traditionally you don't have citrus. It's just, you know what I mean?
Mm.
It's your pineapple, your vodka, your whatever berry liqueur you want to use, Muir or Cassis, and then
Cassis, Chambord, something like
Chambord, yeah. Whatever berry-flavoured liqueur you want to use. And that's the thing these days is like, I think especially with a French martini is like there are so many different specs for a French martini. And you might go to a bar and like they'd be like, oh my God, this is like the best French martini that I've ever had. It's because it's been balanced with sugar and citrus.
Yeah. It's just full of sugar and sour.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's, these I love the term pop martini, and I definitely came up with that last night at 2 a.m.
I had never heard this before, and I was like, is this some new thing? Am I off the trends right now?
No, it was just something I was just thinking of last night at 2 a.m. It's like, pop martini, I like it, you know?
It makes sense. I understand what the category is.
Pop art. Colourful, bright, fruity, fun, you know? That's...
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they have a really... important place in modern bartending.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Like, they shouldn't go anywhere. They just have to be made well.
Yeah. And we have the skills. We have the techniques. We have, yeah. We have the technology now.
Oh, my God. We have the technology.
So before we move on, let's double back to the Cosmo. Because okay. I mentioned that people think of it as a martini, even though it's... I mean, we would... it's a sour, right?
I would say it falls into the sour kind of daisy category.
Exactly, yeah.
But I think... Sorry, you go.
Sorry, there's just a cultural expectation on it. And maybe it's just the American expectation on it. But where do you think that comes from?
I think it... Again, it just comes from that culture of putting these styles of drinks into a V-shaped glass, and people just automatically assume it's a martini.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you could take that even further and go, well, is a margarita a martini? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Is like every other style of daisy that you're putting into a glass or a sour a martini?
Because it's in that martini
because
glass.
Because it's in that V-shaped martini glass.
And that glass got its name from the martini itself.
Exactly. So everyone's just like, well, it's a martini glass, so it must be a martini.
But there's also, I guess, I mean, this is what my partner Lindsay brought up earlier, which is the Sex and the City connotation where they were drinking Cosmos all the time in those V-shaped glass. So it's just it's again, a martini.
Pop culture.
Yeah, right? So it falls under that category of pop martini.
I guess.
Yeah. Which is, I find that whole thing very interesting.
It is. But I think like alcohol shapes so many things in history. And I think that's why I find the history of alcohol so fascinating. Because it if is. You really look back at things, like what was happening with booze culture at the time really shaped history and changed. I'm not even going to go into all of the history when it comes to alcohol, but knowing it.
It is. But also, I mean, think about the literature. We've already mentioned James Bond and Sex and the City.
Totally.
And then, you know, got all these things that have kind of shaped our drinking cultures based on things. It's just such an interesting thing that's happened. What was the most recent one where people got really obsessed with?
The Boulevardier.
The Boulevardier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden people are ordering them and then they get it and they're like, oh, I don't like this. It's really bitter. I'm like, well, did you know it was
Negroni.
In it? It's a
whiskey Negroni. But
no, it wasn't. It was a Spagliato.
Spagliato.
It was a Spagliato.
Yeah.
But even then it's like, oh, you know, it looks so pretty. It comes out tall and like a flute or something. And so people have this like idea of what they think it's going to taste like. And then they taste it and they're like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah. We are very driven by what media we consume, you know.
Definitely. Brainwashed.
We are. I mean, think about the revival of, well, one of my favorite songs, which is Kate Bush's Running Up That Hill.
A great song, by
great
the way.
Great song, but I was so sick of it.
I feel like it ruined it for me too.
Yeah. But, you know, we are so driven by the media that we consume, and the martini is a great example of that. You know, it is a media-driven cocktail.
Definitely. And I think a lot of people come into the bar as well and they're like, all right, I really want to try martini. Like, this is my time. Like, I'm ready. And so you kind of like walk them through it. And then you're kind of like, okay, well, you know, do you like booze, number one? Like, do you like boozy stirred down things? And like, oh, I don't really know. You know, like, I like lychee martinis. And so you're like, okay. You know, you kind of hold their hands and guide them through it. And it's like, I don't want to deter them too much because I do still want them to have that experience. Mm. But I think some people just don't understand what a martini tastes like and then they get it and they're just like, I hate this.
Yeah. it's such an interesting thing about humanity and how we operate with...
Sheep.
Yeah. How we operate with, you know, someone else is doing it, so we've got to do it.
But hospitality is all about trends as well, you know? Like, it's such a big, ever-changing, trending industry, so whatever is all the rage at the time is what's going to be popular.
Exactly, and it's going to continue to evolve and continue to change, and that's, well, one of the reasons I'm super excited
that's
about
why
it.
I love it
I love
well.
Being a part of it.
That's it's why I love it too.
Evolving
it's
and...
The nature of,
yeah.
Adapt or die.
Yeah, that's it, right? Are there any other, well, are there any venues around the world that you think we should be looking out for that really champion martinis in the, I guess, in the purest form?
Yeah, I mean, I have done a lot of traveling. I think something that does, or a venue bar that really sticks out to me that I don't know, it was quite unassuming. So I went to a bar in Barcelona called Dry Martini.
Mm-hmm.
They've been there. They're a bit of an institution over there. They've been there for quite a while now. For anyone that does know them, I think 30 years or so. But I remember going in and I was like, oh, like I don't really know if this is my style of venue. It was like very bright, like hotel lobby style. But I'd heard so many good things. So I wanted to check it out. You know, I always want to check out bars that have a lot of, I guess, accolades or following when I travel.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see what the hype's all about. You know what I mean? Because often the hype is overhyped, I would
say. It's also marketing driven. It's not...
Exactly.
You know, quality. It's,
exactly.
You know, it's quantitative. And I've seen that as well. That's what I like to do.
I think we all see it.
Yeah.
You know, like we all see it in the industry. But so I went in and then the guy was working behind the bar and this guy's been working there forever. And I see him pour the stuff out, gin, ice cold, straight out, vermouth, ice cold, straight out, pouring it all in. And I was like, man, they're really big pours. And then he was stirring it for a really long time. And I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, no, this is going to be over-diluted. Like,
mm-hmm.
And I was just like watching him stir it. And I was like talking to my partner and both of us were just like, don't watch. It's going to be okay. And then he puts these martinis in front of us and we drink the martini. And I think both of us were just like light bulb. We were like, oh my God, like this is such a good martini. Like they'd obviously just mastered their technique so much to the point that it was like such a fine art. And it was one of the most amazing martinis I've ever had.
That's the beautiful thing, right? So the ice cold pours means he can stir for longer.
Exactly.
And create texture.
Exactly.
Which was really, really cool.
So I was like, oh, you know, it's all ice cold. I'm sure like, oh, but oh, is it too far? You know, you're questioning all these things. But I was like, no.
Trust the process.
And it came through. So Dry Martini, one of the best martinis ever in Barcelona.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I mean, we've already mentioned places like Black Pearl here in Melbourne.
Yeah, so Black Pearl does a really, really good freezer pour martini as well, like wet style. Pearl Diver, obviously, as well. The same
very
shell.
Fantastic martini.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Boone used to make me martinis when I was up in Brisbane, mm-hmm. you know, so I would go in there and he'd make me Gibsons. And
I should mention that's Alex Boone.
No, of course I'm that.
but he, fantastic bartender, fantastic martini at Pearl Diver.
Great at his craft.
Yeah. And I should also mention my colleague Mel, who has put together a fantastic Gibson-style martini, which is one of my favorites, which is...
One of my favorites too.
Also a salty-style martini using a little bit of pickle brine.
Oh, yeah.
But it's pickled watermelon.
Oh!
And it's using Anthers Mooncake Gin, which is made by Joey Tai. So it's just this really fun collaboration between... The three of us.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get this.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I'm going to have to try this.
Absolutely fantastic, Martini. I should absolutely definitely give her that shout out because I'm very, very proud of it.
There was another bar that I did go to as well that I do want to give a little shout out to in Edinburgh. They are called Hey Paloo. I think, to be honest, probably one of the best drinks I've ever had in Edinburgh, full stop. And also some of the best experience, service, vibes, like very hospitable and obviously like that Scottish kind of service is kind of special it's, on its own, you know what I mean?
Like it's a bit very, rough and tumble but fun. And
I think like Australians and Scots kind of two peas in a pod.
Yeah, they gel really well.
Very similar energies, very similar humor. My partner's Scottish, so I'm Kiwi though. I'm not Australian.
Mm.
But anyway.
I mean, same but different.
Same, totally. Yeah. But anyway, I got a really, really amazing martini there. And again, it was just perfect temperature, perfect dilution. They did like some really beautiful like feta stuffed olives with it.
Mm-hmm.
They had like a beautiful like, I think it was like a little basil oil. They gave you a little dropper that you could like put on top by yourself because you get that nice little bit of texture.
It also creates your own individual experience.
Exactly.
Right?
It's interactive. So like all that sort of stuff that's a little bit interactive is really fun. But outside of that, I think without all the frills, the most important thing is that the product is good and that the cocktail is good. And the cocktail was delicious. I'm pretty sure I had a couple while I was there, little bit, I think, messy when I was leaving. But yeah.
Well, I can't say I've actually been to Heypaloo. I didn't. At least I don't remember if I did go there when I was in Edinburgh.
You should definitely go.
Yeah, but the like you said, that Scottish bartending style is so similar to what we have here in Melbourne. And then a lot of Australian bartenders end up over there or vice versa.
It's that big transfer, the Melbourne.
Melbourne-Edinburgh.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Massive.
So, yeah, it's something I really need to go see is Heypaloo then.
You got to check it out, man. Mm. And they do like a really cool paper play in there as well. I know this is like getting a little bit off.
More towards the Daisy stuff.
Exactly, but they do a great paper plane and they like give you a piece of paper to fold up and make a paper plane out of, and you have to throw it from a certain point at the bar, and if you hit that bottle, you get a free shot of that. So, yeah, it's pretty fun.
That's pretty cool.
I made a really bad paper plane, so I didn't get one.
Oh, dear. Well, on that note, we should probably go into our final four questions that you haven't heard yet.
I'm ready.
Very funny, one of them is related to our topic today. But let's go through those very quickly. I just want a very quick answer from you.
All right, I'm ready.
What is your shot of choice?
Whiskey.
Or
tequila.
Anything in particular?
Okay, so if I'm going to go dark spirit, I would probably go... I was about to say all of them. So I probably first go... look, Jameson, straight up. Jameson is my shot of choice.
Yeah.
If I can't get Jameson, I'll probably get some kind of scotch. I like Maker's Mark as well. Just straight up rail pours.
Yeah.
Tequila. Let's just go in with like a really cheap like Fortaleza. You know?
Really cheap like Fortaleza.
Fortaleza is my favorite delicious. But also Cayo 23 is great to shot as well.
Tapatio.
Yep.
Fantastic. What is your guilty pleasure drink?
Grasshopper.
I love a fucking grasshopper.
Or Brandy Alexander.
Yeah. Grasshopper is one of my favorite
modern cocktails. It's so good. Yeah. I also really like White Russians.
Yeah. I mean, well, I can join you on one of those three.
And it's a one and done, okay, guys? Yeah. Like, it's like I'm going to have my dessert now. I'm not going to drink creamy drinks all night because I think...
I'll vomit.
That's a recipe for disaster. But give me a grasshopper. I'm happy, girl.
But yeah. Grasshopper, great drink.
Love grasshoppers.
Yeah. How do you like your martini, shaken or stirred?
I think I probably answered this earlier. I would prefer it stirred.
Mm-hmm.
If someone shakes it and wants to give it to me, I will accept it and drink it happily.
Yeah. But thrown.
There's preferences. Rolled. Look, I'm happy with the thrown. As I said, I love a bit of a throw. I love the aeration. I love the texture that it provides. But I think...
For the right reason.
I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to this stuff. And I think stirred is best.
Yeah, but again... Each their own, right?
Absolutely.
Now, final one. Speaking of each their own, what are your thoughts on red wine and Coke?
Oh, my God. Disgusting.
I'm a stan. I'm with it. Yeah. Slice of orange in there or slice of lemon.
Slice of lemon for me, yeah.
Like, it's so tasty on a hot day, heaps of ice. I think it definitely does depend on the wine, but... I'm not opposed. I will say that for sure. And I love like sangria as well. So like I'm into that kind of cold wine.
Yeah.
Got some fruit.
But a Spanish style wine with it is just beautiful, you know.
I hear you.
I don't know what's the matter with you all. I'm slowly losing this battle.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you so much, Kayla, for joining me today. I've had so much fun.
I have too. It's been really fun. I've enjoyed it.
Absolute pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Let's go drink a shot of gin.
Let's do it.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for joining me on another episode of Spirited Discussions. I hope you had as much fun as I have and have been able to take away something you didn't know. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. And please join me next time on Spirited Discussions.